we started just briefly the Mishnah last week on Daf and Ham and Aleph, and as I mentioned, we are starting really a new section of the Masechta which deals with Yayin Nesach and defining Yayin Nesach. And the first Mishnah is going to deal really with the question of when wine becomes wine. In other words, if I have a grape and I squeeze a grape and the grape gets squeezed a little bit, and there's some grape juice on the outside of the grape, is that wine? If the guy touches that Yayin Nesach. So I'm going to reread the from the beginning of the Mishnah, and then we'll talk about some of the details. So the Mishnah on the bottom of Nudhayim and Aleph says the following: Lochin gas beuta min ha'avdei kochavim. You're allowed to buy a gas beuta. It means you have a vat. So imagine again, you have a vat of some kind in which you put the grapes, and people would stomp on them. That's how you. Get the wine out. And then, from the vat, you'd have some type of a hole, and there might be, it would lead down, either there was a pipe or just an area where the wine would flow down against the ground or something. Maybe you would plaster it into either a kli or actually a pit, but the pit probably was lined with something, you know, with the plaster or something like that, so it wouldn't absorb. And then, that's where the wine would accumulate. So the Mishnah says that the gas here, that we're going to talk about the gas and the bor. The gas is the kli, or area on top where you stomp on the grapes, and the bor is what collects the wine below. So you're allowed to purchase a gas from a guy. Let's say the guy, you can buy grapes obviously, but let's say the guy already had stomped on the grapes. So now what you have in the bor, what you have in the gas, excuse me, in that upper chamber, is you have a mixture of psoles, as we might call it, the garbage, the residue of the grapes, whatever's left of the grape skins and the pulp and so on, and the twigs, from the vines, and the wine itself, and grape juice. I'll probably refer to it as wine from a halachic perspective. Until it's cooked, there's no difference between grape juice and wine. Nothing to discuss. The only situation that I'm aware of, there might be, and I'm not even sure this is true. This is true only lachatchila. Is that you don't use grape juice on the Mizbeach unless it has had 40 days of aging, at least. But that may only be, I don't know, if you don't have any other wine, I'm not sure what you do, but as long as the wine is, as long as the grape juice has not been, let's say, cooked and so on, so it's probably, I suspect that if you didn't have any, you'd pour that on the Mizbeach as well.
So the Halamai says there's no difference between grape juice and wine.
If it's uncooked, it's unpasteurized. Once it's pasteurized, so that becomes a separate discussion. The Gemara in Bava Basra, I think Daf Tzadi Her, Daf Tzadi Fav, describes that one of the Amoraim, obviously this was when he was adding on to Shabbos from Chol, it wasn't Friday night when it was dark already, he would take an Eshkol Shelanovim, a cluster of grapes, he would squeeze it into a cup and make Kiddush. Right. So obviously you can make Kiddush on grape juice. The question, I think my last job as Haggadah Drasha here, I think I was about grape juice. So the issue with grape juice is that it's pasteurized, it's cooked, it's mavushal, so that is certainly no good on the Mizbeach. Yayin mavushal is no good. Obviously it has certain leniencies as well. It's not subject, we learned a couple years ago, it's not subject to the rules of Yayin Nesach and so on, but certainly grape juice that has not been, other than squeezed, once you squeeze it out, that's called wine. When you cook it, it might be called Yayin Mevushal now, and that's a separate discussion. So the Mishnah says you're allowed to purchase this gas, which had been pressed from the non-Jew, even though it's all, presumably there's plenty of wine mixed in there. Now, why is the wine still in the vat? The answer may be that in some cases you have sort of a plug. You have a pekak, and it's preventing the wine from flowing out. But when you open that pekak, then the wine flows down into the bor. So right now, let's assume for the moment, I don't know whether the wine is flowing out of the vat. It probably is. If it's stationary in the vat, either way, for the moment, the Mishnah says you can purchase a gas be'uta min hanachri. Next, afalp shunotel v'nosein notel biyado v'nosein tapua. And even though the guy is picking up some of, let's say, the grape residue, you know, it's got to be a better word for that, but the grape, the pulp and the pressed grapes, and he's taking them and piling up on one side, so obviously you'll wind up with one big pile of grape leftovers, and then the wine will be mostly by itself. Nonetheless, afalp, it's mutter, eve afalp shunotel biyado v'nosein l'tapuach. And then the Mishnah says a third thing, according to our nosach, according to our version, and this is probably the correct version, ve'eino ose yayin nesach ad sheyered labor. It does not make something, the goy does not make wine, yayin nesach, until it gets down into the bar, into the pit. Now, where is the wine before it goes into the pit? So it's in two places. It's number one, maybe three places. It's on the grapes, even before you put them in the vat to stomp on them. It's in the vat itself when you stomp on them. And then it can be on its way down, flowing into the bor. But the Mishnah says it's not. He does not make it into Yai Nesach until it reaches the bor. Okay, now there are a lot of questions that emerge just from these lines. It would seem to be very straightforward, but it's not straightforward at all. Question number one is when it says that you're allowed to purchase these things, does it mean that you're allowed to drink it as well? One of the things that we maybe encountered briefly when we did a little bit about Yai Nesach in the second parak, and we're going to see repeatedly throughout the upcoming Dapim of the Gemara, is that sometimes Yai Nesach is permissible bahana. It's permitted, certain, not real Yayin Nesach is not, but sometimes when you deal with Yayin, that you're not allowed to drink, but you're allowed to sell. It's prohibited ba'achila, b'shesia, but it's permitted ba'hana, you can get benefit from it. And sometimes, it's completely prohibited, you can't even get hana from it. So the Mishnah here says you can buy, you can purchase a gas be'uta, these pressed grapes in the vat from a non-Jew. Obviously, it's permissible b'hana. You may not buy, nor may you sell something where there is an isur of hana. But the question is, are you allowed to drink this wine? So that question, that's question number one. The second question is, at least as it's presented here, it doesn't turn into Yai Nesach until it reaches the bar. That we understand. But when it gets into the bar, everything in the bar is prohibited and everything else is permitted. So the question is as follows. How does it become usur when it's in the bar? In other words, the guy, what does it mean? The guy stomped on the grapes and the wine flowed down into the bar. Is what's in the bar usur now? Is that what the Mishnah means? Or does the Mishnah mean no? It means that if the guy presses it up here and it makes its way down to the bar and he doesn't touch it down in the bar, that's not a problem. Because up there, it's not called wine. And if it's not called wine, it can't become Yai Nesach. When it gets down to the bor, when it accumulates in the pit, it's called wine. That's fine. But the wine doesn't become usur until the guy touches it. Or do you say that because the guy pressed it on top, when eventually it reaches the bor, at that point, it becomes, even though the guy doesn't touch it anymore, it becomes Yai Nesach at that point. Now, you can imagine, at least according to the Mishnah, this. I'm sorry to disappoint anybody, this is not Halacha L'maisa, because this is only Mishnah Rishona. Mishnah Achrona said that you cannot, even the wine on top, when the guy presses it in the vat, in the many circumstances, it already becomes Aser. But thinking about, in terms of what we call Mishnah Rishona, it would matter very much in the following, just imagine constructing the following system. You have the place where you press the grapes, which is exposed, but then you could have the grapes flow into a container that's not accessible, that nobody can touch. Now that would be, if you believe that it only becomes also when the guy touches it in the bor, that would be a very nice solution. In other words, you can have the guy do everything you want, pressing anything you want on top, and just make sure that by the time the wine stops flowing, by the time it accumulates in the vessel, at that point nobody can actually physically touch it there, and you would go a very long way to solving your problem. Whereas if you believe that it doesn't become Yayin Nesech until it reaches the bor, but if the guy pressed it on top when it reaches the bottom, then that would actually not be a solution. Okay. So anyway, the Mishnah here, up until this point, seems to make clear that the wine, until it reaches the bor at least, is not prohibited in, it's not Yai Nesach, it's not prohibited b'hana. Okay, some details we still have to work out. Now the Mishnah continues. Dorachim in ha'oved kochavim begas. You are allowed, therefore, to stomp. You can have a stomping party, along with the guy in the vat, to make the grapes. I feel like there's a, like from the Grapes of Wrath, there's a scene there or something about the pressing.
With I Love Lucy.
I Love Lucy, yeah. That's
I Love yes. Lucy on it.
That's a one. That's a different one. That's a different one.
I do remember the show, but as a child, and I even know where she was born. You know where she was born, by the way?
Jamestown,
New York. It's right near Camp Stone. That's why I know. It's the birthplace of Lucille Ball. So you can go to the Lucille Ball Museum there if you'd like. I've never been there. I've been to Jamestown, but I've never, only to Friendly's Ice Cream. So anyway, so fine. So you have the, you decide to have a stomping party with the guy. That's fine. Avalo Botsrin Imo. You're not allowed to actually harvest the grapes with the guy. That seems a little strange. What's the issue? So the Mishnah right now is assuming, and this too, this is a stringency, but this will change, is that it is prohibited to cause chulin, non-holy foods, non-shruma, non-kachim. You're not allowed to cause them to become tameh in Eretz Yisrael. And that's also ligrom tuma b'chulin, l'chulin b'Eretz Yisrael. Now, we normally think, because we don't paskin that way, we normally think that you're not allowed to intentionally defile, make truma become tameh, because then it can't be eaten. You're not allowed to make kachim become tameh because they can't be eaten. But chulin, we assume, chulin is what you eat firstly when you're tameh. What's the big deal? But, again, it's very, we've spoken about this a little bit, it's very, Tumah V'Tahara is so far into the way we think. We don't have a sense of this, this sense of purity. It's a loss in certain ways. So for us, we don't think about it at all. What's the big deal? Food's Tameh, we're all Tameh. But there were Jews, that may have been why they were called Prushim, who really were makbid on Tumah V'Tahara so much so that even Chulin, when it could be, if you're Tameh, you have to eat Chulin. But if you're Tahor, you avoid letting Chulin become Tameh. It's usher to be gorem tuma l'chulin be'eretz Yisrael. Now, there are two reasons for that. One is, just as I described, it's a notion of a higher level of what we would call kedusha of sanctity or precious. But there's a second issue as well, which doesn't apply under all circumstances, which is, chulin, if it's tameim, it's not really a problem to eat. But you could envision a situation where you actually do create other kinds of problems if you defile things that are chulin. And that's in the following case. Supposing you harvest your grapes, okay, and now you let them become tameh. And right now the grapes are, they're actually not chulin, they're tevel, right? They're untithed produce. So what's the problem with being metameh them? Well, in order to eat it, you have to separate truma from them. And if you're metameh the tevel, then when you separate the truma is going to have the same status as the tevel. So there could be a concern there as well that being metameh tevel, once you separate the trumas and maestros, you're fine. But while it's still in the tevel state, which is, by the way, what we're dealing with in our Mishnah, when you harvest the grapes, you normally did not separate trumas and maestros until it was wine. So if you harvest the grapes and you make them tameh, you're not only migorin tuma l'chulim b'Eretz Yisrael, if that's a concern, but you're also being metameh potential future truma. Now, that itself may depend upon sort of a conceptual question of how do you, maybe not, is a question of how do you relate to Tevel when it hasn't had the proper tithes separated from it. In other words, when there's Truma still mixed into Tevel, is it treated for Tumah purposes like Truma or like Chulin? The same question, by the way, merges. That's not relevant for us today so much, but in Chutz Laaretz certainly, but the same question arises with Challah. When you have a dough, and you have to separate challah from it, is a dough, an isa, which is tavul l'challah, it has an challah separated, is its status now like challah, because this challah mixed in, or is its status like chulin for tumah purposes? Even though later you're going to separate challah, but certainly there could be some concern of having something which is tevel and defiling it, even if you're allowed to defile chulin in Eretz Yisrael, even if that's, which is what we hold, nonetheless, you are defiling the future truma, and you're going to render that essentially unusable or of much lesser value to the Kohen. So that could be a concern as well.
Does it have to be that physical wine that you separate, or could you buy other wine and...
That's an excellent question. So the answer to that is, if you got other wine, which is tevel, there's a rule when it comes to truma. In order to separate truma from something, it has to be min hamukaf. It has to be next to one another. They don't have to touch. So what you would do, a proper thing to do is what you suggested, if you could find other wine, which is still tevel. If the other wine had truma separated from it, you can't separate from chulin on tevel, or from tevel on chulin, it doesn't work. But if I have other wine, which is also tevel, I could put them near each other in separate bottles, and I could say I'm going to separate the truma from this tahar bottle for all of it. Yes, that you could do. That would be a way of fixing it afterwards, but let's assume the guy is taking his entire crop. His entire crop. What's that?
It's like air rights in the building.
Okay. So the concern, so the Mishnah says you're not allowed to be botzer, you cannot harvest the grapes with a non-Jew, because doing so, he, the guy, is going to be metame the stuff right then. And therefore, you are involved in being goring tuma l'chulin in Eretz Yisrael. Now, here's the interesting catch, though. When do the grapes actually become tame? So, next week's parsha, which is not next week, but it's in 3 weeks, For the Bali Kriya, the great trivia question is, the next Kriya Satorah of a regular Parsha Seder we're going to read, we read it on Shabbos, and we're going to read it seven more times before we go on, Shemini. Which is the first Aliyah of Shemini.
Not in Eretz Yisrael.
Not in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they're only going to get it five times, I think. Okay, but we're going to get it. We have seven more times to go here on the first Aliyah of Shemini. But if you go later in Parsha Shemini, I think somehow we have encountered this before. You encounter the Pesukim that tell us that a produce only becomes susceptible to becoming tamei if it has had liquid placed upon it with intent. Either intent or if liquid fell upon it, but you're happy about it. V'chi yutan mayim al zera v'nafal minivlasam alav tameihu. If mayim is placed upon it, and they say yutan dumya de yitain, just as yitain, when you do it actively, you do it because you want it. Yutan is the same thing. If you desire it, even though it happened on its own, that's great. Otherwise, then the nevela, the carcass of the animal that died without a shechita, falls upon it, tameihu. Then the food becomes tameh. Now, when you harvest grapes, that's certainly midin Torah, at that point, they don't have liquid upon them. When do they become tameh? When's the first time the grapes will become tameh? When you stomp on them. As soon as you stomp on them, and then the liquid comes out, right then the grapes are mukhshar lekabel tumah. And the goy is going to be mitameh them right there. So the Rishonim even point out here, Tosfos discusses this, when you cannot be botzer with the goy, you're not allowed to harvest the grapes and the first pressing. When he first steps on it, you can't do that. Once the guy has stepped on it, at this point it's all tameh, and then you can join in the actions. The guy didn't do an avera. There's no prohibition for a guy doing it, but you're not allowed to be gorim tumah, which means you cannot do anything from the stage that the grapes become theoretically suitable to be mekabel tumah, namely when you detach them from the ground. Grain, by the way, when food is, you can ask me a question, all food has had water on it, a liquid on it, right? It rains. Right. So the answer is it has to be detached from the ground. There's actually a very interesting halacha, Pesach is this week. We say that we're not worried about wheat becoming chametz. Why don't you worry about the water that rained on the wheat? Right. The answer is when it's mechubar lekarka, we're not concerned. But the Shulchan Aruch does say, there was an article in the Times a few years ago about this. You saw these charedim in Arizona picking their wheat for, why were they doing that? Because the Shulchan Aruch says that once the wheat is totally fully grown and benefits not at all from being attached to the ground, then when the water falls on it, there's a concern of chimutz actually. The Shulchan Aruch, I don't think one has to be concerned about that generally. I don't think they leave the wheat necessarily that long, but there is such a din. But when it comes to Tumah Vatara, I don't think that's true. As long as it's attached to the ground, It does not receive hechsher. It doesn't become mukshar to receive tumah, lekabel tumah, until it's detached from the ground, and then you intentionally or happy about the liquid being placed upon it. So what the Rashi and Tosfos says explicitly is that when you're not allowed to be botzer with the guy, you know, once you harvest it, now the grapes theoretically are susceptible to kabel tumah, and they're going to become tameh because the guy's going to do it, so you're not allowed to assist in that process until it actually becomes tameh. Once it's tameh, you're done, you can work with the guy. The guy didn't do an avera, it's not a problem, but you can't actually assist in the stages earlier because you would be gorim, you would be a causer of being mitame the grapes. Okay.
Isn't that the karpas, when you wash for karpas, isn't that the chiyutan? Isn't that the basis for halachically? What isn't that one of the reasons?
No. The reason, I think, I have to go back and check. I think the reason why we wash, firstly, the din of karpas, it's a din that very few people observe. I don't know. I started observing this a long time ago. According to the Shulchan Aruch, the Balei Tosfos say we're lenient on this. According to the Shulchan Aruch, if you wash, let's say, food, wash grapes, and you don't dry them off, you have to wash the tilas yadayim before eating them. We don't make a bracha. I think the Gra might have made a bracha. But I don't make a bracha. Why? And that's the same thing with karpas. You're going to dip something in mashka, right, and you're eating it with your bare hands. And that's where, you know, the poskim say if you're eating Cheerios or cereal, so even though the stuff is dipped in liquid because you eat it with a kli, you are not makpid. The reason, I think, is as follows, which is that if you're yadayim, stam yadayim, where you don't wash, mid the rabbanon are treated as shnios latoma. And if you have chulin, so your yad will not make the food tameh. In other words, since chulin cannot go below the level of sheni l'toma, that's the lowest level it can reach, so your hands touch the chulin, it's tahar. But part of one of the many gzeiros, the yurches gzeiros, we learn the yurches davar, amongst the yurches davar that Beishamai won, and they made a gzeira on, is that mashkim automatically become a rishon. So when you dip something in mashke, if your hands are shnios, and they touch the mashke on the food, the mashke automatically becomes a rishon l'toma, and it turns around and it's mitami the food that you're holding. So that's where the business of karpas comes from. And as any davar shetibulo b'mashke requires netilas shadayim. That's what the Gemara says, at least what the Mechaber paskins.
So if you use a fork, you don't need to...
Correct, but that would defeat the purpose, right, of washing for karpas. Right, but yes, if you use a fork, if you always eat with the utensil, then there's no concern of your hands touching the mashke. So even those who are makbid for this din, don't, if you eat, again, like cereal, if you eat it with a kli, so then that's not an issue. It's only when you eat it with your hands.
We have a tradition of melach stumit.
No, that's Mayim Achronim, and that's something else.
But also the rechatz. Rechatz b'li bracha, the person who prepared the salt water has to wash their hands.
Right, but that's not why nobody else for that. Nobody else has to wash for that reason. But we wash because it's a davar shetibulo b'mashka.
So if we all used forks at the seder, we could save time
on the karpas. Yes. Yes, but you could.
People there, it's not a bad.
It's true, except for the whole point of the whole minhag is to do it.
Well,
so right.
To arouse questions.
Correct, but.
Now there's a better question.
What's that?
Now there's a better question.
So anyway, so that's why that. So with the guy, there's no isser in him making a tameh, but you, if you are involved in the process, then you are doing it also. It obviously would be worse with a Jew, because with the Jew, it's not only you would be involved, but it's misayei yedei over avera. You're helping another Jew do an avera. Here, the guy is not doing anything wrong.
Explain that last part, how you're helping another Jew.
In other words, for a Jew, we'll see in a second, you cannot be dorech. The next line in the Mishnah is Yisrael shu oseh betoma. Lo dorchen velo boatsrin imo. Right, we understand why you can't be boatser with him, but why can't you be dorech? Once he stomps on the grapes initially, now all the grapes in the vat are tameim. So it's not, you're not being gorim chulin anymore, tuma lechulin anymore. So why are you not allowed to be involved? The answer is because the Jew is an over avera, and in any part of the process where he's been doing the avera, you're not allowed to be involved. Right, it's kind of an offshoot of lifnei iver. Right, so once the stuff is tamei, so if nobody did anything wrong, then you can work at that point. So the guy did nothing wrong, you can work with the guy. But the Jew, at least on the dricha part, this act of dricha, since he violated the aveir in the process, even though it's tamei already, you are not allowed to be involved with him. That's the next line. Avo Yisrael shu oseh betuma lo darchen velo botsrin imo. Aval, even though you're not allowed to engage in that stage of the process with the Jew, once the process is over in which he was metameit, the dricha, the pressing, then molichen imo chavios lagas, you can bring umevin imo menagas. You're allowed to bring the barrels to the gas, to the wine press, to collect the wine. And you're allowed to carry those wine to the wine cellars. In other words, that already is no longer part of the act of being metameit. Now the wine is tameit. He's the Jew who did this is an avarion, but that's not your problem. No, what's done is done. It's tameit. Now you can engage in the rest of the process. But in handling the grapes at any stage which leads up to or is in the process of actually defiling the grapes, you're not allowed to be involved with the Jew who's an over an avera. Right, so the real difference, as Tosfos points out, between the Jew and the Goy, at this, according to our Mishnah, that this is not the din, we don't paskin like multiple parts of this Mishnah, but according to this Mishnah, with the Goy, once he presses it initially, you can join in the stomping party. With the Jew, you can't have anything to do with that. Once it's made into wine, once it's in the pit, then you can bring the barrels to help, and you can put it into the barrels, and you can take it out and bring it to the cellars. So that's what the Mishnah says. So, okay. And
the
then...
Is you could do neither.
What's that?
The halacha is you could do neither.
Well, let's wait and see what the Gemara's conclusion will be. So now the Gemara says, Nachtom shehu ose bituma. If a, not what's a nachtom? So nachtom is
a
baker in this case. Sometimes a nachtom is a cook, but it's a professional food preparer. So in this case, it's a baker. Nachtom shu oseh betuma lo lashin v'lo orchin imo. You're not allowed to knead the dough with him. That's when the puts the water into the flour. At that point, it becomes tameh. The flour is susceptible to tumah. He's tameh. He's metameh. Velo orchen imo. And you're not allowed to shape the dough with him either. To arrange the dough, to knead it, and to shape it, whatever shape you want to bake. That you're not allowed to do. Avol molichen imo pas lepaltar. You're allowed to bring with him the bread to the palter. What is the palter? Here's a machlokas Rashi and Tosas. Rashi says the palter is the baker. All right, the palter is the baker, meaning you're not allowed to be involved in the making of the dough. And that includes the shaping of the dough. Once the dough is made and done, it's tame already, you can help bring the trays to the oven. That's what Rashi says. Tosas thinks that's wrong. Tosas, first, is not what the word palter means. And it also, from a conceptual perspective, you're still involved in the making of the bread. If you want to think about the analog to the wine you're only allowed to be involved in once it's finished. The wine is complete, you're just packaging it, you're bringing it to the cellar. So Tosas says the palter means what we've seen before the palter means. Palter means the bread seller, the merchant. So the Mishnah says that it's the same thing as the wine. You're not allowed to be gorem tumah, and you're not allowed to be involved in helping at any stage when there's someone who's violating an avera. And in this case, it's the Jewish baker who is violating the avera of making the bread bitumah. Okay. Now I know we still have a few questions outstanding on the Mishnah. But in order to understand the discussion in Tosos, so we have to first do the Gemara, okay, to understand where they're coming from. So the Gemara begins as follows: Amar Rav Huna, Yayin, Kevan Shehischil Lehi Moshech, Ose Yayin Nesach. If you have wine that begins to flow Lehi Moshech, then it already becomes Yayin Nesach. Now, when you first read Rav Huna's statement, you immediately start scratching your head. What's he talking about? The Mishnah said that until it gets to the bar. What's Rav Huna talking about? So the Gemara says, Tanan, Lochim gaspa uta mena oved kochavim, v'afal pi, shenotel biyado, v'nosen l'tapuach. So what are you talking about, Rav Huna? The Mishnah says that you press the grapes in the vat, and your guy can even pick up some of the grapes and put them on a pile, and you wind up with wine and grapes separate, and it's mutter. So how can Rav Huna say that it becomes Yayin Nesach as soon as it starts to flow? Now, what does it mean, Lehi Moshech? So Rashi here writes, that very long Tosos on our Amud is a discussion of this, but Rashi writes, Shehischil Li Moshech, he says, Shehagas Asuya B'midron. The gas itself, the place where you press, is made on a slope. Nimshach Mitzad Ha'elyon Letzad HaTachton Karayayin. And as apparently your bore, your gas that you're stomping in is not flat. It's a little bit sloped, and then there's a hole at one end, and then what happens is the wine starts to flow and go into the hole. And Rav Huna is saying, as soon as it starts to flow in the vat, it's already Yayin Nesach, which is, the Gemara says, what are you talking about? The Mishnah says it's not wine, it's not Yayin Nesach, until it gets down into the bor. So the Gemara says, Biga Amar Rav Huna, Bigas Pekuka Umalea. Now, this is interesting. He asserts two requirements to explain the Mishnah. Number one, the gas is pekuka, which means the plug is sealed, so you're not going to get any flowing out of the gas itself. It's not going to flow down into the bar. And number two, it has to be malaya. Why is it full? The answer is because if it's not full, it will flow from one side to the other. But once it's already, is not full, flowing over the wine, but once already the wine coats the bottom, when the guy steps on it, there's no flow that is distinguishable. Because at this point, it's plugged up. You know, if we were to look at it from a side angle, you know, it would be a vessel that's closed with a slope, but you can't see the wine moving in that case. So when are you allowed, according to Rav Huna, to stomp in the vat with the guy? Only when it's pekuka umaleya. That's how Rashi understands. I'm going to leave that. I'm not going to explain Rabbi Tam Shita. He has a different view on this. He's in some ways more lenient, but we're going to wait till probably the next year to get to that.
What does the phrase mean? V'achal pi shenotel v'yado v'nosan l'tapua. What is he saying there?
It means even though. Was the Mishnah saying?
No, this is Rav Huna. We skipped that. That's the line before.
No, as I read that part, that's part of the Mishnah. It's just the quotation of the Mishnah.
I'm saying, so what does that mean?
It means that even though, the Mishnah says, even though he's picking up grapes, the solus of the grapes, and putting it on one side, it's still not Yayin Nesach. And Rahuna says, yes, that's true if there's basically no flow for the wine. The wine, it gets pressed out of the grapes, and it doesn't go anywhere. Right? So there's still a chiddush, because even though you're picking up the grapes and now the wine pools in one place, nonetheless, the wine has not considered starting flowing yet. Let's assume that for the moment. We may revisit that when we look at Tosfos eventually. So Rav Huna's answer was Begas Pekuka Omaleya. So then the Gemara says, Toshma, Ve'ena Osa Yayin Nesach HaChayeri Labor. It doesn't become Yayin Nesach until it reaches the bor. So you see that just because his Chili Mashiach, it doesn't make it Yayin Nesach, it's only when it actually reaches the bor. So the Gemara says, no, Rav Huna, the same thing. Begas Pachanami, Begas Pekuka Omaleya. Same thing. Toshma. Now comments, look at the third statement. Yorad lebor, mashe bebor asur, and v'hashar mutar. So if it flowed into the bor, and you say that which in the bor is asur, the rest is mutar, the rest is something that has flowed already, it just didn't reach the bor. So you can't say anymore, begas pekuka malaya, it's not going to work, it's not pekuka. It's unplugged, and the wine is flowing out. It was hiskli mashech, and nonetheless, the Mishnah says it's not yayin nesach until it reaches the bor. So finally, Rav Huna gives in. Amar Rav Huna, lokasha, kan b'mishnah rishona, kan b'mishnah achrona. You're right. The Mishnah, our Mishnah, is Mishnah Rishona. That was the original din. And later, they turned around and they were more machmir. In fact, there are Mishnayos later in the Masechta, which the Rishonim claim actually reflect Mishnah achrona. Okay, but we'll eventually we'll get there. So what is the difference between Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah achrona? The Tanya. But Rishona ha'yu omrim badad. They used to say that the following three things. Ein botsrina oved kochavim begas. This is our Mishnah. You can't be botser with the guy. She'asur ligrom tuma l'chulin shebe eretz Yisrael. You are not allowed to be engaged in the process of causing chulin to become tame. Ve'ein dorchim im Yisrael she'ose peiroso betuma. You cannot engage with the stamping with the Jew who engages betuma. Even though the peiros are already tame once he started stomping, she'asur l'sayeya yedei ofer avera. You're not allowed to be involved with those who are violating an avera anywhere in the act where they're violating the avera. And finally, avol dorchim in ha'oveit kochavim begas. You're allowed to stomp with the goy. That's badad. But botzer, dorech, and dorech. You're allowed to be dorech with the goy begas velo chayshinan l'derav huna. We're not concerned about Rav Huna's considerations. That, by the way, is not part of the Brisa, right? We're quoting a Brisa here. The Tanya, Barishana Omrim, the Brisa didn't say Velochai Shinan the Rav Huna. Rav Huna came long after the Brisa. The Gemara is explaining Avo Botsrim Imanachri Begas, and the Gemara is explaining Velochai Shinan the Rav Huna. We're not concerned about that wine as soon as Hischali Mashech. It's not wine till it reaches the bar. But V'chazru Lomar Dabad. I think that's wrong. Dabav. The first two things here, by the way, of these three letters, initially, the first one is badad, which, by the way, is an ironic choice of language because a badadim are the people, I think, who are involved in pressing the grapes. Probably not an accident that was the acronym. But of the three letters, the first two are prohibited and the third one is permitted. So in the first one, it was in botsrim agoy, in dorchim im Yisrael, hosebetuma, but dorchim im nachri. And now, dabav, ein dorchim ha'oved kochavim begas, you're not allowed to engage in stomping the grapes with a guy, mishrim de Rav Huna. And as soon as the wine starts to flow, it's wine and the guy makes it usher. Right now, how's the guy making it usher, by the way? With his feet. Which is interesting. That issue is going to be discussed as well. Mishum de Rav Huna, ve'ein botsrim im Yisrael, she'ose peirosu betuma, you're not allowed to harvest with the Jew who makes his peiros, will do his peiros betuma, this is not part of the brisa, but v'kosha kein shein darchen, of course you can't engage in the dricha, the betzira doesn't make the grapes tame, that's just preparation. But when he is actually dorech, in that act, and he makes a tame, certainly not allowed to be involved with the Jew, but so far it's dalid, in dorchim im hanachri, in botsrim im Yisrael, aval, botsrim in ha'oved kolchavim begas, shemutar ligrom tuma l'chulin shev'eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah Achrona believes that there is no prohibition of causing things to become chulin to become tamei in Eretz Yisrael, of being metame chulin when it's chulin, and therefore you're allowed to be botser with a guy, because the guy is not doing any kind of aveira, and He is, and there's no issur of goyim tumah lechum and shebaretz Yisrael. Now you have to ask a question, though: what is the aveira then with the Jew? If there's no issur of being goyim tumah lechum and beretz Yisrael, what exactly is the prohibition? So Rashi writes the following: Ve'im botzrim im Yisrael. The top Rashi on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Mishum the goreim tumahu, the afalgav. Even though, what does the Bryce hold about goreim tumah beretz Yisrael? It's not a problem. The afalgav the svira lad hashta. Now we believe muto ligrom tumah lechulin kidik tani seifa. As the end of the Bryce says, hani mili the goy the obey kochavim. Avo the Yisrael, a goy is not chayev to separate shumas and maisus from his stuff, and therefore if you matame his chulin, not a problem. Aval the Yisrael tevulim heim letruma. The Yisrael's produce is tavel truma. He's going to have to separate truma semaisos from this wine, and therefore also ligram tuma truma. The siv ani hinei nasati lecha es mishmeres trumosai. The pasuk in Parshas Korach b'shtei truma sakasa medaber. The Torah warns the kohanim about truma Torah and truma tameah. And truma Torah, you're not allowed to defile. Abishtei truma sakasa medaber v'kosha kein shein dorchim. Certainly you can't be dorech with the Yisrael. Shedrichasan is mitamatan. The dricha itself, the stamping, actually makes it tame. Umisayea yidei ovrei aveira. Okay, so that's
Rav
how...
Rav Huna supported it.
What's that?
Rav Huna.
So Rav Huna was speaking l'mishnah achrona. And the Mishnah here is reflective of the Mishnah Rishona. Okay.
I'm sorry. I didn't quite get that. Why... What's the problem with the Jew and the harvest?
When you harvest with a guy, according to Mishnah Achrona, and you cause the chulin to become tameh, it's not a problem because there's no issur in making chulin tameh in Eretz Yisrael.
No, that part.
And because the guy is not obligated and will not separate shumas and maisos, there's no issue there. But if you are goreim tumah to the chulin, your own chulin, or the chulin of another Jew, so granted, from the chulin perspective, it's fine. But that chulin is not actually chulin; it's tevel. Right, it's untied grapes, it's unprocessed grapes. When you process it into wine and you make that wine tameh, now when the Jew comes to separate the trumas and maisos, the truma is going to be tameh because all the tevel is tameh and the truma is pulled out of it. So it's one thing to be goreim tumah lechulin; it's another thing to be goreim tumah for truma. That's awesome.
For
any Jew stuff, right? Any Jew is going to have to separate truma, and therefore, when you're mitameh the chulin, you are being mitameh truma as well, and that's prohibited. Okay, so now let's step back in order to understand the discussion in the Mishnah and discussion in Tosfos. So we need to sort of see the Gemara, right? The Gemara, and let's just remember this one detail. The Gemara had a contradiction between Rav Huna and the Mishnah, and I really want to focus on the third contradiction. The Mishnah said it's not Osa Yorad Labor. If it reached the pit, it's Eno. What's in the pit is prohibited, and the rest of it is permitted. And Rav Huna said, as soon as the wine starts to flow, it's aser. That was the contradiction, and there was no resolution other than to say, yes, they disagree, because the Mishnah reflects Mishnah Rishona, and Rav Huna reflects Mishnah Achrona. Okay, so now, the question is the following. When it says, Yorad Labor, Masha Bebor Aser, under what circumstances is it aser? So if you take a look in the big, turn back to Nun Hamad Aleph. Tosfos writes, Yorad Labor, the second Tosfos, Yorad Labor, Masha Bebor Aser. Peirush HaKuntras, Rashi explained, Im Nagabo Ovde Kochavim Achrechem. Rashi says that if a guy, when we say Yorad Labor, and what's in the bar is also, Rashi says it doesn't mean if the guy pressed it here and the wine flowed down into the bar and nobody touches in the bar, doesn't mean that it's Yayin Nesach. Rashi says it means once it's in the bar and then a guy touches the wine in the bar, now that's Yayin Nesach. Beforehand, in other words, before it reaches the bar, it's not called Yayin. So nothing that the guy does can make it prohibited. Once it reaches the bar, according to Mishnah Rishona, when the guy touches it in the bar, that makes it Yayin Nesach. Mitoch Perusho, Mashma Mitoch Perusho, the Ritzono Lomar, it sounds like Rashi means to say, Vahashar Mutter, Vafilu Yigabo Ovet Kochavim. Let's say you have wine in three places. You have wine in the vat, you have wine flowing down the slope, and you have wine in the bar. From Rashi, it sounds as if, Eino Osa Yayin Esach Acheyeved Labor, and it means the guy touches in the bar. It means if the guy reaches into the Niagara Falls of the wine, and he touches it there, it's not Yayin Esach. It's only when he touches it when it reaches the bar. V'chein nira, and so Tosa says it would appear from the simple language in the Mishnah, the nema de katani seifa dumya de resha. In other words, every clause in the Mishnah, when it speaks about it's permitted, it's permitted, it's permitted, it should be the same scenario. And just as the nesina l'tapuach, the second case of the Mishnah, when he puts it on top of the pile of grapes, the pressed grapes, ma'iri b'negia, it means the guy touched it. He picked it up, put it on, and when he picks up the grapes from in the liquid, he's touching the wine, puts it on the thing, that's negia, and it's mutter. So af mutter de seifa, when the Mishnah says, hasha'ar mutter, everything but that which is in the bor, it means minigia. It means even though the guy touched it, nonetheless, it's still mutter. Only when the guy touches it when it's in the bor, on the bottom, that wine becomes ayinesach. Aval ein lefaresh, you shouldn't explain, meaning Rashi's interpretation that Tosos likes, is excluding the following. Ein lefaresh, de ritzono lomar v'hashar mutter, she'eno nesar, kishanaga ha'oved kochabim v'masha bebor. You could have said the following. You could have said that when stuff reaches the bor, that stuff becomes aser. But the rest is mutter. Now, you know what the chiddush of the rest being mutter is? So you would have, so Tosa says the following. You would have said that the rest is mutter, even though the guy touched that which was in the bor. Not if the guy touches the stuff flowing down. If the guy touches the stuff flowing down, that would become aser. You would have said, so what's the Mishnah telling us? It's telling us that when the guy touches Masha Bibor, it doesn't become Nesar, al yidei nitzok. You know why you might say that which is flowing down is aser? Because it's touching the wine in the bor. When you have a continuous flow, so if the yayin in the bor is yayin nesach, then maybe the wine which is flowing down, which is not mixed in with the bor, but it's touching it through nitzok, through pouring, you might say that nitzok is kechibur. Now, I mentioned last week that this issue of nitzok kechibur, at least with respect to Tum of Itara, was a machlokes between the Sadducees and the Pharisees. The Sadducees believe nitzok kechibur. This view is reflected in the Mishnah in the last chapter of Maseches Yadayim, in the fourth perek, where the Mishnayos record a series of debates where Kovlim anu aleichem prushim, the tzdukim say, we complain against you, O Pharisees. And the Pharisees say, Kovlim anu aleichem tzdukim, we complain about you. And one of the things that's mentioned there, I believe, is on Nitzok is Kechibur. And we also, I think it's in that Mishnah there. And then in the letter written from the people who wrote the Qumran scrolls, wherever they lived, to the temple leadership, when they outline their halachic differences, the letter known as MMT, Miktsas Masei Torah. So in that letter, the Mutsakos are mentioned. And the people who wrote those documents, not the people running the temple, were in fact the ones who said that Nitzok was Tamei, which suggests that in fact, as the Mishnayos suggest later, the Pharisees were always running the temple. Sometimes the high priests were Sadducees, but the control of the Mikdash was in the hands of those who adhered, it seemed, to Pharisaic halachic views. So that was a debate when it came to Tumah V'Tahara. The question is, what do you say in the other areas of halacha? And particularly in the area of taruvas, when you have prohibited mixtures. I am pouring permitted food into a vat of prohibited food, and they come in contact. So the question is, what exactly is that din? Is that already considered mixed in or not? We're going to see later in the parak, not in this parak, I think it's in the last parak, I think off Ayin Beis, there's a machlokes ha'amorayim as to whether nitzok is kechibur by yayin nesach, and there's a machlokes, I think, Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam had a paskim. Rashi is, I think, machmir, Rabbeinu Tam is mekel. So Tosus right now says that you might have thought to say what you could have said on your own. The Mishnah means the following. When the yayin reaches the bor and the goy touches it there, and right now, through both interpretations, right now in Tosos, the yayin and the bor only becomes aser if the guy touches it there. There is a third position that Tosos will quote at the end of our Tosos, Rashbam, who says, no, if the guy pressed it on top, when it reaches the bottom, then it becomes aser. So right now, that sheet is not under consideration. Everybody agrees that the yayin and the bor only becomes yayin nesach when the guy touches it. If so, so the question is, when we say Masha Bebor is also when the guy touches it, the Hashar Mutter, so Tosa says, you might have said Hashar Mutter, meaning if the guy doesn't touch the wine waterfall, then the fact that the wine flowing in is attached to the wine at the bottom because of nitzo, that does not make the wine on top aser. But you might have said, if the guy touches the wine in that waterfall, it would become aser. That's what Tosfos says, don't say. That's the interpretation he's rejecting. But again, let me read from again, now read it through. Aval ein lefarish, and go back a few lines about the eighth line in Tosfos. Aval ein lefarish, deritzon olomar vashar mutar, means she'eno nesar, kishenaga akum b'masha b'bar ayide nitzok. Aval vadayim naga avde kochavim, have osur b'maga ovid kochavim. Deshapir have karuyayin. You would have said no. You know, the wine that's flowing down, that wine, even once the guy separates the grapes and puts them on the pile, and the wine is flowing, even though it hasn't reached the bar, you would have said, oh, that's already called yayin. If the guy touches that with his hand, that actually becomes aser. And the only time we say that that's mutter is when the guy touched the wine in the bottom, in the bar, and we don't say that because they're attached through nitzok, it becomes aser before it reaches the bar. Of course, you're going to ask me, what difference does it make? It's going to flow into the bar anyway. The difference is if you take a cup and you put it there and you catch the wine that's flowing in, so then you'll be able to drink it. So Tosfos says, don't say that. The imkain, if that were true, if there were a distinction between whether or not the wine doesn't become usser when it's touching the wine in the bar through flowing, but if the guy touches it itself, it does become usser. So Tosfos says, "Dim kain ki maksha mine bigmar l'rafun da amar kevan shehischa limashech osa yayin esach." Right, the Gemara had a stira with Rav Huna, and he who said that once it starts to flow, it's yayin esach. Lishnile the Rav Huna iri b'maga ove kochavim. You say that there's no stira between Rav Huna and the Mishnah. Rav Huna's talking about, you know when Rav Huna's din, when the wine starts to flow, it becomes asur? Rav Huna says when the guy touches the wine right there. But the Mishnah says it's mutter. The ena osa yai nesach atsheyere the bar. It means that it doesn't become asur. The ein de lo shaya hashar ella al yidei nitzok. In other words, Rav Huna could have said, yeah, when the Mishnah says, Eina osa yai nesach hacher the bar, it means that if the stuff on top is touching through nitzok, the wine in the bar, and the guy touched the wine in the bar, the stuff on top is still mutar. And when Rav Huna said, the stuff on top is asur, that's when the guy touches it there. In other words, the Gemara would not have had a contradiction that would have forced it into the resolution in Mishnah Rishona versus Mishnah Achrona. Right? Clearly, the Gemara didn't want to say that. The Gemara asked three questions against Rav Huna. The first two questions it was able to answer, Begas Pikuko Malaya. It could come up with a teretz to explain that Rav Huna and the Mishnah were talking about two different realities, two different cases. But when it got to the third line in the Mishnah, that was no longer an option. You couldn't say Begas Pekuka Malaya when the wine has already reached the bar. So the Gemara was forced to say that there is a contradiction between Rav Huna and the Mishnah, and that's because the Mishnah is speaking as Mishnah Rishona, and Rav Huna is following the later Mishnah. But Tosfos says we have a solution that doesn't require doing that. Could be Rav Huna and the Mishnah were once again talking about two different cases. One is where when the guy touches the stuff in the bottom, and the wine that hasn't reached the bar is still permitted, because nitzok is not kechibor, the flowing stuff is not considered attached. And Rav Huna was talking about when the guy actually touches the stuff as it's flowing down, or in the upper gas, and that actually is asur. So
Tosfos of nitzok kechibor.
Right.
I mean, there's different ramifications of that.
Right. So this Tumah V'Tahara is one, and there's Isser V'Heter is the one we're dealing with, Taroves. I'll tell you, by the way, I'll tell you what's very odd, and I don't know the answer to this yet, because I have not learned all the Tosfosim through the rest of the Masechta, and in particular on the Sugya Nitzok Kechibor. I'll tell you what is very odd about it, actually. If you were going to say Nitzok is Kechibor, where do you think we'd more likely say it? In Tumah V'Tahara? Or in Taroves, let's say, Yayin Nesach. What would you say?
Taroves.
Why?
Other than that's more usual.
No, but I, from a conceptual perspective, which makes more sense?
Yayin Nesach.
What's that? Why?
He's touching it when it's becoming yayin.
He's not touching it. He's touching this wine.
This wine.
They're in contact.
More metaphysical.
And by the way, he doesn't have to be touching. You're saying something interesting, which I hadn't thought about. So, you're suggesting almost something, but it's not true. I think when you look at the sugulator, it's not true. There are two ways of talking about nitzo kechibo here. One is the wine is flowing on top, touching the wine in the vat, but not there, and then the guy touches the wine in the vat. I mean, you could say, while he's touching the wine in the vat, is he also touching the wine up there? But that's really not what the issue is. Nitzo kechibo could even be, the wine in the vat is already yayin nesach. The guy is already on vacation in Costa Rica, right? He's gone, but the wine in the vat is yayin nesach, and you're pouring wine into the vat. So if what you're saying is true, that's not nitzo kechibur. Everybody agrees it's not, right? Because he's not touching the wine. But the machlokas is even there. In other words, when you have wine that's already aser, the guy's not touching it right now. It's yayin nesach of the guy, and now you're pouring wine in, does the stuff on top become aser, right? So you can't say that, suggesting that when you're touching the bottom, it's like you're touching the top. I think it's more intuitive by Tumah. Exactly for the reason you were suggesting, but it doesn't. What you're saying is not true by nesach. By Tumah, the issue is, are you touching it? In other words, are the two things touching? I would argue that once the stuff on the bottom is tameh, it's touching the stuff on top. Granted, it's not in stasis, it's not eshbor, and it's not still, it's flowing. But it's flowing, right? They're touching one another. But the issue by Yayin Nesach is taroves. It's a mixture of two things. As long as they don't mix, and the molecules on top, on bottom, are not going on top. So I can take a point and say, there's no Yayin Nesach, mix in with it. That's what I would have said. I think it's counterintuitive, the way Rav Huna himself actually, by the way, holds nitzo, later in the Masechta, nitzo kechibur. But I think it's counterintuitive. If the Pharisees held there is no nitzo kechibur by Tumah, there certainly shouldn't be nitzo kechibur by Yayin Nesach when the guy is no longer touching the stuff in the bottom. Yes.
No,
that's good. Okay. So I don't know the answer to that question, but bottom line is Tosa says that if in fact there were a difference between touching the wine on the way down versus just touching the wine on the bottom and using nitzo kechibur, that would have been a ready resolution to the contradiction between Rav Huna and the Mishnah. The fact that the Gemara doesn't offer it tells you that it's not true, that there's no distinction in the Mishnah. What doesn't matter whether or not the stuff on the way down, whether you're concerned about nitzo kechibur, nor does it matter if the guy touches it directly. It's still not Yayin Nesach. It's not Yayin. Not only is it not Yayin Nesach, it's not Yayin until it reaches the bar, and if it's not Yayin until it reaches the bar, it should not be able to become us. Okay. So now the Gemara says, V'chi tema demakshe mikol makom shapir, desamuch ahad shamina le Rav Huna, de islei beperek basra denitzo kibur. So Tosus is a very sharp suggestion here, which he's going to reject. I just told you, I let it slip, that Rav Huna himself holds nitzo kechibur. He holds nitzo kechibur, independent of this discussion. So if that's true, by the way, Satosa says, the answer wouldn't work anyway for Rav Huna. In other words, you're right. If we were to argue that the din is, that we're going to distinguish, that the Mishnah that says that the ayin is good, the stuff that hasn't gotten to the bar, is because the guy didn't touch it, and it's only nitzok, and Rav Huna was talking about where the guy actually touches the stuff on the way down, that's nice for us in the abstract, but it's a problem for Rav Huna anyway. The Mishnah is against Rav Huna regardless, because not only does the Mishnah make clear that if the guy hasn't touched the stuff on the way down, in other words, even if the Mishnah held that the guy touching stuff on the way down would make it usher, but the Mishnah at least has told you that if the guy touches the stuff on the bottom, it doesn't make the stuff on the way up that's still coming down, it doesn't make it usher through nitzo kechibur. But Rav Huna, not here, elsewhere holds nitzo kechibur. So the Mishnah either way is against Rav Huna. It's either bad or worse, right? In other words, the way Rashi reads the Mishnah, even if the guy touches the stuff on the way down, it's mutter. And that's double problem for Rav Huna, right? But even if you didn't say that, even if you wanted to say, no, if the guy touches the stuff on the way down, we agree with you, Rav Huna. But if the guy touches the stuff in the bar, through nitzo kechibur, it doesn't make it aser, that's still against Rav Huna. So you might say, you know why the Gemara didn't give this answer? Because they were really asking, they knew the other Rav Huna. And they were sort of asking in the back of their mind, they didn't, yes, literally they could have given the answer, but they knew the answer wouldn't work for Rav Huna. Maybe that's why the Gemara is asking against Rav Huna, even though it might be true, not like Rashi, that if the guy touches the stuff on the way down, it is usher. So that's what Tosa says. You bechitema again. Bechitema de makshimi komakom shapir. It's still a good kashir. The samuch, the Gemara is relying upon, ahad shamina le Rav Huna de islei beperek basra de nitzo kechibur. The Mishnah, and the sugya later in the last parak, Rav Huna holds nitzo kechibur. Uva masnisan mashma, minimally, at least, de nitzo keinu chibur, mid de kashari hashar shebegas. So you would have said, that's the answer. Really, Rashi's wrong. We could say the other pshat. But you want to know why didn't the Gemara give that answer to Rav Huna? Because they knew Rav Huna couldn't have used that answer anyway, because he holds nitzo kechibur. So Tosa says, if that were true, don't say that. Why? De'im kein, hava le'le talmuda lasuyim ilse de Rav Huna l'kamon, kevan demikoach da'hi parech. In other words, you can't say that. The Gemara, if it wanted to do that, it should have quoted Rav Huna from later. It should, instead of quoting this statement to Rav Huna, which we could resolve with the Mishnah, it should have quoted Rav Huna of Nitzo Kechibor and say, no, our Mishnah holds Nitzo Eino Kechibor. What do you do with that, Rav Huna? L'chein nira kepeirish Rashi, demayri masnisan dahashar mutar, af benegias oved kochavim. Rashi has to be right. If the guy touches the stuff in the vat, the wine in the vat, the wine in the wine flow, it doesn't matter. It's still permitted. It does not become yayin, and the maga of the guy does not make it usar until the wine is actually in the vat. And therefore, v'hashta nicha deleka l'shenuyeh b'gemara, demastisa l'omai rimaga over the kochavim, v'rav huna ay rimaga over the kochavim, the Gemara can't give that answer. Dal karchach masnisa nami b'mairi over the kochavim, kideprecious. Okay. So this is the end, sort of the first issue in Tosos. How do you read, according to Mishnah Rishona, how do you read the Mishnah? What does it mean that it doesn't become Aser until it reaches the bor? Now, I'm going to read one more line of Tosos, but I'm actually going to skip over the next part to now. We may come back, probably we'd come back to that when we start a week after Pesach. Again, the Sunday of Isru Chag Pesach, I will planning on giving shir. God willing, we'll have a special topic. We won't continue in the Masechta, so topic to be announced. I just want to read the last line in Tosos, which deals with the Rashbam, which is really a separate issue. It doesn't necessarily have to touch upon the Machlokas Rashi and whoever that other opinion is that Tosos says don't say. If you go to the first wide line in Tosos, in the middle of the line, it says Rashbam Piresh Masha Bebar Oser Af Belo Negias Oved Kochavim Mitam Kochol Shel Oved Kochavim Degasri Be Rabbanan Kidarminan Lekamim Perik Basra. We'll eventually get there, but Rashbam says the following: it is true that the wine itself does not become Oser until it reaches the Gas, but because it came into the Gas through the Koach of the guy, we're going to see cases later where a guy doesn't touch the wine. Clearly he doesn't touch it, but he pours it into something. And that may be called kocho. And kocho will make it, in some cases, it depends on the circumstances. Sometimes the chachamim would go there on koach shol v'chavim, even though you know he didn't touch the wine. So Tosis Sarashbam says here, again, even though the guy doesn't touch the wine in the vat, and even though, let's say, when he touched it up there, maybe it wasn't called wine, because it comes in, flows into here, and becomes wine, it's aser because of kochol shel ovdei kochavim. V'hachinami mikoach derichaso begas nimshach hayayin v'yored lebor. V'hashar mutar sh'eino neser mikocho. The rest of the wine right now, before it reaches the bar, is not aser. Why? Kevan sh'eino adayin yayin. It's not wine yet. Right, so until it reaches the bar, it's not wine. When it reaches the bar, it's wine, and it's also because the guy exercised koach on it, and now it's wine. The gamenu nesar, the stuff that's not in the bar yet, is not usher. Lo b'maga, not if the guy touches it in the wine flow or on top. The lo b'nitzok k'depricious, or because it's touching through flow the wine in the bottom. All right, so the bottom line then is, for right now in Tosos says that following Rashi, that the Mishnah Rishona says that when the wine is pressed in the vat, and when the wine flows down, it is not wine yet. The guy can touch it from here till forever. It doesn't make it Yai Nesach. Once it reaches the bar, then the wine in the bar is wine. If the guy touches it there, it becomes Aser, according to, let's say, Rashi and Tosos. And according to the Rashbam, even if the guy doesn't touch it in the bar, since it came into being through Kolach HaGoy, and now it's in the bar, and now it's called Yayin, so Rashbam says that it is now, but only the stuff in the bottom is Aser, Pana, and even if the guy didn't touch it there. Question?
Yeah, I'm just a little confused as to how the Tosfot is saying that they would have resolved it, the contradiction with Rav Huna, without the first part of Tosfot, that they would have resolved it without.
If you believe that when you touch the wine in the flow, that the guy would make it usher then, and all the Mishnah was saying that it's not usher until it reaches the bar, is that if the guy doesn't touch it in the flow, the wine in the flow doesn't become usher because of nitzo. So then you could have said the Mishnah that says that the wine is not usher atshei the bar means it's not usher ayde nitzo. But Rav Huna, who said that once it starts to flow, it's yayin, means if the guy touches it there, that makes it usher. That would have been the simple resolution. So Tosa says the Gemara didn't give that resolution because it's not true. Okay.
The remnants of the skin. after you stomp.
Yeah.
And the juice is out.
Yeah.
Is there any issue of
so we learned a while back a Mishnah in the second perek. I think it's in the Mishnah. Chartzan and Vizagim shel Nachri, after 12 months, once they've dried out totally, then they're motor vahana. I may be consumed. But up until that point, as long as there's lachos, once, for Mishnah Achrona, that the wine in the vat itself is Yayin Nesach, then the grape skins have absorbed from that wine, and until they are completely dried out, they are us.
Even though you can still make wine out of it, theoretically?
I think so. They talk about Yishun Yud Beis Chodesh, right? Age for 12 months where they're so dry, I don't know what you can do at that point, but theoretically, I guess, yeah.
What about before it ferments, when it's like grape juice, though?
It's still Yayin Nesach. As soon as it's a liquid wine, and it's been filtered, maybe not even filtered enough, it's already, the guy makes Yayin Nesach. Okay. Wish everybody a Chag Kosher Sameach. For those who are traveling, a Siyah Tova and a safe return as well.